Hi, this is Rhonda Britton, founder of Fearless Living, and I am so excited today because we get to talk to somebody so special to all the fans of Starting Over and, of course, to my life and, of course, to Fearless Living, and that is Miss Jessica from the third season of Starting Over. And I just want to welcome Jessica because today is 9/11, and I'm so grateful that she's taken the time out of her crammed, busy schedule. So exciting to hear more about her life and that she's been able to join us. So I just want to say welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, Rhonda. It's good to hear your voice.
Oh, it's good to hear yours, too. And I so much, what you know, people don't know, that we've been connecting, and I can't say enough what a joy it was for me to physically see you and physically hug you this last year and get to see your beautiful face and to catch up, and it was such a joy for me. So
yeah, me as well. I realize it's been 12 years since we were Starting Over together.
What? That feels so wrong on so many levels.
I know.
12 years. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Time has flown by. And so let's hear about, I think the first thing we could do is, I'm sure everybody is so excited to hear what you've been doing since your graduation from the Starting Over House. And then once we get the update from you and find out how you've been doing, I do have some questions from fans that they want to find out some things and ask you. And also just to talk to you about what it was like in the Starting Over House and, you know, why you decided to go to Starting Over. And then, of course, we want to talk about your favorite exercise. So lots to talk about. But first, let's just catch up. So you say it's been 12 years. So, You graduated from the Starting Over House. And what have you been doing with your beautiful, amazing life in the last 12 years?
I know. So I graduated from the Starting Over House, and I decided to stay in California to be close to my mom's family and kind of really focus on that. But I also think, I don't know if I was totally ready to be out of the house, because it's so easy to kind of create and live the life that you want and, like, honor all your personal commitments when you have, you know, sisters keeping you accountable, coaches there to support you, Dr. Stan, a phone that you could just pick up at any time and ask for help. So I joined the coaches program. That was one of the first steps I did. Your coaching program, and became a certified Fearless Living life coach. And that just felt so important, to continue the tools. Because I did so much personal, like, deep healing around my mom and 9/11 on the show. But what drew me to Starting Over to begin with, because I watched it for two seasons religiously, was all the tools I was getting and the ways that I was learning, and to kind of step back and see why I was thinking the way I was thinking, and being able to kind of rewire the way I'd react to things and the way I'd filter things and my perspective. And that was like the gift of the program. So I really wanted to continue doing that, and then also being able to give it back to others, because
I was so excited when you applied for the Life Coach Certification Program and, you know, decided to become a Certified Fearless Living Coach. And how did that program support you moving forward in your life?
I think it's a lifestyle change, right? When you start to say, hey, I'm going to, like, live differently than the way I was kind of brought up to culturally or by my parents and teachers and life experiences. So it was really, like, wonderful to suddenly, you know, kind of be in a very structured system within a bigger community of people who spoke the same languages and were able to kind of use the same tools and call you out in ways, knowing what you're committed to. I apologize, my dog's barking in the background.
Oh, we love dogs, so we're good.
Okay.
Bark away, dog, bark away.
So, yeah, I think that was the big piece. And then to be able to, like, again, be able to practice it with other people and to be able to, like, give back to say, like, hey, I learned how to live this way and now I'm able to support other people in doing it. And there's nothing more joyful than that.
And do you still use the tools today?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just had I have a new job that was really outside my comfort zone in terms of leadership. And it was amazing because I went and got my nails done by another FLY graduate, another coach in Albuquerque. And she called out my trigger within, like, seconds of us sitting down. And I realized, like, without even realizing it, doing this work for 12 years, I had somehow, like, very subtly fell back into an old pattern. And once I was able to identify it, we laughed. And yeah, once you identify it was something I could work with.
Identifying that old wheel of fear.
Yeah, exactly.
So then after becoming a coach, I know you also, that kind of sparked within you a real desire to learn and grow in lots of different areas in personal development. Yeah. And so what are the kind of things did you, you know, kind of put in your toolkit?
Well, really, it was really like my continuing to expand my toolkit was rooted in, I understood everything intellectually, right? Like, mm-hmm. I could, like, assess situations and myself and be like, this is why I'm acting, or especially with my grief and, like, my PTSD, like, I really got to know that. But my body was on, like, its own, my body and my mind were not aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would know, like, I would know things intellectually, but then it would feel like, you know, anxiety and fear were still so, like, in my body on a cellular level, if that
mm-hmm.
makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that became something that was actually really interfering with my life, and I was still making decisions that, you know, I knew at my core weren't correct and with what I wanted. And I really had to step back and say, like, hey, I got a diagnosis of PTSD. Like, what am I going to do about that? Because knowing about it wasn't enough. And so I moved to New Mexico in 2009 to just really figure out how to heal the trauma that was still trapped in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that through, like, traditional medicine programs. So I became a natural therapeutic specialist, and then I went to Colorado and became a trauma touch specialist. Back to that model of, like, please heal me and help me heal and learn it in a way that I could then give back. So that was a huge chapter. In New Mexico, it was just, yeah, how do we learn to feel safe in our bodies again when experiences have shown us it's not always safe?
You bring up such a good point, and I think that's one of the benefits for me about fearless living is that I know for fearless living, you know, one thing that I get is, okay, I know my core fear, right? I know the wheel of fear. I know what my fears are, et cetera, and that's all really amazing, and it's important. And without that, I don't think I would have the courage or the willingness to learn the other things that I must do on my path. So, you know, like my body, I wouldn't pay attention to it, right? Because I'd still be dealing with my, you know, negative self-talk. But when your negative self-talk goes away, you really are faced with, like, oh, where else can I grow? So you start seeing, I know for me, you start growing, you know, like, where did I grow? Where did I allow myself to grow? And where have I held back my growing? So it sounds like you're committed, which I know I am. I'm committed to always finding the next place to grow and expand, the next place to build my toolbox, the next place. And like I said, without fearless living, I don't think I'd have that courage, and I don't think I'd have the willingness, and I don't think I'd have the insight. I don't think I'd know what it was.
Oh, definitely. Like, I think that, I mean, at the most baseline level, that's what fearless living and starting over taught me was, like, oh, I'm starting to feel uncomfortable about this. This is outside my comfort zones, and, like, lean into it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, somewhere, right. I don't know what the process will look like, but at the end, I'll be someplace, like, knowing myself deeper and being able to, like, shine brighter.
Yeah. And does it always work?
It does. I'm not saying that the journey's, like, always prettier.
Yeah.
I'm
not committed to a pretty journey. I'm committed to a real... I'm not. I'm like really committed to an authentic, real journey. I really am. That's what I'm committed to. So, yeah. So, at the end of the day, what I'm hearing you say is, yeah, it might not be pretty, but you get where you need to go. You heal what you need to heal, and you know, kind of rise up more you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, even my relationship to, I think, because we're talking about grief a lot, is for so long I was trying to control, like, to not feel
mm-hmm.
how, like, ooh, I'm going to get emotional, but how, like, gut-wrenching it truly is. But I've realized, like, you know, now when those days come, I dive into them, and I dive into the grief, and I also know that somehow, like, the deeper the grief goes, the more access to the other side I get. And it took me a while. I mean, it definitely took me a while to learn that, but... that was definitely a huge gift from the starting over and, like, this way of life that the coaching program, like, supported me on.
I love that. That makes me so happy. And so tell me, because I don't think you've ever told me.
No, you've never talked about me on the show. So, like, why I went and what your thoughts were during that.
Yeah, yeah. So what was it that made you go ahead and audition for Starting Over? Because that was a process in and of itself, is to go, oh, well, I think I'm going to go on a television show, and, oh, I have to audition, and, oh, wait, I'm going to work with Wanda.
I was brilliant at denial during and, like, detachment during that period of time, so that helped me. I had watched the show, like, I'd stumbled upon it by accident, season one, and I'd watched it, like I said, I TiVo'd it every single day, and I loved it because, one, I saw bits of myself in every single woman, no matter, like, what their story was. There'd be this moment of, like, oh, my gosh, that's me, like, and there'd just be this growth opportunity, and then one day I saw you with Haley and Linnell, like, it was a mother-daughter, like, tension moment, and I remember being like, wow, like, you called them out, you called the teenage daughter out on something in a way that nobody had ever called me out on my own, like, dynamics, and I remember being like, wow, I could probably learn from that person, because I had been in therapy, like, soon after 9/11, but I was going through a lot of emotions, and I wasn't, like, I knew what they wanted to hear. I read self-help books, I was always ahead of therapists, I felt. So there's those combinations. Plus, I felt like your story, there was this fear I had that, like, my story was so overwhelming that other people didn't have the capacity, and I had been met with that reality of, like, therapists crying or gasping. And so I also had this, like, oh, Rhonda's been through it. Like, like, she's not going to be scared. So that was part of it, too. And I secretly went to one of your weekend workshops to see what you were like in person, and I left, like, crying and already feeling like I was breaking open in, you know, scary but good ways. So I was really desperate. Like, I tell people it was a lot of there's some fearlessness in going, but I was really desperate. I was, it had been 4 years since my mom was killed. My dad had, I was going back. It was a tough time. Because four years after my mom was killed, my family was really fragmented. My dad had just announced he was getting married. They had identified my mom's remains. It was like one of the last bodies they identified. So we got that news. And I was really unhappy at work, so I decided to, like, step back from my job. And then my partner of 5 years had cheated. So it was kind of like, oh, my gosh, everything at once just crumbled. So my ex at the time, my ex now, I mean, but my boyfriend at the time, brought home a video camera. My boss at the time said, you should apply to Starting Over. And so I sat home one night and just made a video. And I think I knew, like, something in me knew, like, the minute I sent that video, I'd be putting this in motion. But I just needed help.
And it was a joy for me to work with you and, you know, to know you. It's such a joy. And, you know, what you're referring to for some people may be new to me, you know, just maybe stumbling on this recording of this call, maybe after the fact, is, you know, you referred to my story, and I'm just going to say it in, like, literally 1 second because I want to stay focused on you, is what Jessica's referring to is that my father murdered my mother and committed suicide in front of me on Father's Day when I was 14. So when Jessica says she knew I would understand, you know, what, you know, I think, and I know, Jessica, we talked about this, that, you know, death of a spouse, death of a parent, death of a child, you know, death of anyone close, that is unexpected and horrific, adds a new level of grief and guilt than, per se, somebody who has passed with cancer. Doesn't mean it's not just as devastating or just not as heartbreaking, but it adds a level of shock and horror to it when it's, you know, a terrorist attack on America and your innocent mother is on the plane on 9/11, just trying to get to visit her sister in California. And you were supposed to be on that plane that day, right?
Yeah. I mean, there had been a minute where I was intending to go with her, but I had changed my mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it wasn't a huge thing that, like, was in my system, but it was definitely having a possibility. Yeah. Yeah, it was the first time she flew alone. That was what was really hard.
And, you know, when it's sudden and horrific and it's, you know, murder, you know, your mother was murdered, my mother was murdered, and it brings a new level of I think guilt and shame and anger. And I know, you know, I asked Facebook readers, Facebook followers for questions about you, and a few brought up, like Dana asked, are you still angry or have you found your way to forgiveness? And a few people brought up anger because they remember how angry you were in the Starting Over house. And, I mean, I think it's one of the things that you and I worked on a lot is your anger. But more importantly, I think the first thing that we did together is give you a right to be angry.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's funny, like when you say that, I kind of chuckle because I was so, like I said earlier, I was so good at not feeling that during that time. Like I definitely had my days of like secret crying, but I was, I think, too, like when you're on this path of like, I'm here on this planet to do like healing, peaceful work, like creating positive change, which was always, like since I was little, my mom had said that, you know, you're here to be of service. When suddenly something so dark and violent and like based in hatred and, you know, takes a person from you, the last thing you want to do is like put that energy into the world. Mm-hmm. Like I had created this like rule for myself, like it would be such a disservice to your mother if you were to be projecting like anger and hatred. But I was also as a child not really allowed. Like we weren't really allowed to have those emotions in my house. So it ran even deeper than that. Yeah.
And so coming to the Starting Over house and me saying to you, anger's okay, you can feel anger, what was that like?
At first I was really confused because I didn't think I was angry. I really didn't.
Did it hide so from it, yourself, right?
Yeah. And I think you had pointed out that, you know, to face that, I would lose control. And at that period in my life, like, that's how I was surviving. I was so high functional. Like, I had an incredible career, like, you know, a beautiful apartment, like everything that I was, you know, would want at age 25. I had attained way more than that. And to be able to do that with what I was suppressing took so much energy, clearly. But I had to be suppressing, like, things massively. And yeah, so I didn't even, until that brick exercise we did, I didn't get it. I was like, what? I'm not angry.
So let's talk about that brick exercise. And for the people who are listening right now and are like, wait a minute, I want to know this brick exercise, just go to facebook.com/RhondaBritton, RhondaBritten, and you'll be able to find the videos that of the exercises that Jessica and I are talking about. So what was that like to, you know, have me just like, okay, here's some bricks. Well, you know.
Yeah. Well, I always like to tell my friends, like, behind the scenes scoop. The first part of me was freaked out that I had to be in a bathing suit in front of the camera. So, like, really, that was when I first got there, I was more like, oh, my God.
What?
Like, I'm going to have to be in a bathing suit? Are you serious? So that was there. And once I got through that, I was really shocked. Like, again, at first I was disconnected, so I really didn't understand what you were asking. But once I started writing things down, I
on the
break. Yeah, I started writing things I was upset about and angry about. And of course, it was nothing that I think, yeah, I'm curious, like when people ask me about forgiveness and stuff, because a lot of my anger was rooted around, you know, yes, like my mom going and things like that, but a lot of it was also rooted in terms of how the world was reacting to her death and the way it was being politicized and the way it was being sensationalized and the fact that because it was so public and in a time of, like, social media and all of that, there was, like, no way for me to protect myself from, like, reminders of it. And I had no clue how, like, maddening that is. I had no idea that I was – there's a part of me, like, was raging about that stuff.
Did it almost feel on some level that, I mean, I remember you and I talking about this, that on some level, it's like being so public, it almost took it away from you.
Yeah, definitely. Because, one, like, you know, there was, like I said, there was just no way to protect myself. Like, images were everywhere. Footage was everywhere. People were referencing it. It changed the entire world, right? It was a very, very deep personal grief, but this was also a moment that for our country was, you know, traumatic for everyone. So I think if there's something unique when you lose people in like collective way, like public tragedy, is that it's never really just yours.
Because
the minute somebody even learns about it, you know that there's going to be space made for them to share their story.
Mm-hmm.
And their story did not always mirror, like, you know, the story that was in my heart. So,
So even whenever you mention, so what you're referring to is like anytime you mention 9/11 or your mom passing on 9/11, what I'm hearing is you have to kind of make the space for the other person because they also had something happen 9/11.
Yeah.
And so it's never just kind of your story. It's everybody's story.
Yeah. And during that time in like 2005, and I think it was really acute afterwards as well, a lot of people's way of kind of processing what happened was about like, how do we get revenge or how do we protect mm-hmm. ourselves? And that so felt misguided to me. But yeah, it was always coming from, you know, a good place. Like we went to where my mom was from and hearing young people saying like, hey, I enlisted because of like your mom's death, and to like honor that because that's wow, you know.
Yes.
But wow. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. So I put the bricks out, and I ask you to write down everything you're angry at on the brick.
Yeah. And I filled them up every single side.
You did.
And then I threw them in a pool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you asked me why they were in the pool. Or like, what? No, you asked me like what happened to my anger. I was like, oh, it's at the bottom of the pool. Like, I still wasn't getting it. Like, it still wasn't clicking. Like, I usually prided myself in understanding your exercises, and that one, I was like, I still didn't get it. I'm just going to leave it at the pool. But then you really, the whole point was to illustrate that, like, when we don't deal with those things, like heavy bricks, they're just, like, in us, like, weighing us down. And, you know, it's up to us whether or not we want to actually address them and move them.
Because then I had you go in the water and get the bricks.
Yeah, to get them all out, which felt, you know, I remember that being confusing, too. I was like, why am I bringing them back? Like, isn't this be over? But it wasn't over. Like, just naming them clearly wasn't enough, and I hadn't realized that yet. Like, you know, naming them, definitely awareness, like, it, you know, it met that denial piece, but I think it's back to that body as well. Like, anger is an emotion that, like, lives in us, like, just like joy does, just as sadness does. And so if you don't move it, you know, it's just stuck, weighing you down. Yeah.
That's right. And so then what did I have you – I made you go all the way into the water, get all the bricks off, and then what did I have you do?
You gave me that big sledgehammer.
Yeah.
And I had the opportunity to, like, read each brick and smash it. And I smashed them so hard that I broke the, like, wooden base underneath and everything.
That's great. And how did that feel to be smashing them and reading them out loud and being told it was okay?
It was incredible. I mean – I watched it again before our call, and it, like, there's that moment of, I think anytime we address something so huge and so deep and, like, release it, there is this moment of, like, oh, this sucks, like, wow, like, this, you know, so there was that moment where I think afterwards I was like, oh, my gosh, the gravity of what I have to carry is huge, but then, like, I can see it in my face, like, suddenly there's this lightness to it that I had, like, really seen at the beginning of the previous ones. And I think I can see that, like, there was an actual, you know, release on, like, a physical, emotional, spiritual level. And that even though the focus was anger, it was something beautiful, like, you know, and I moved it. And it felt so good. Yeah. How did you come up with that exercise? Like, where
well,
did it even come from?
You know, I think one of the things that I don't know how I got good at this, for whatever reason, I just am good at thinking of where do I want you to get to at the end of our time together? And, you know, what is holding you back? And what tool, you know, what prop, what, you know, thing can I use in the house, around the house, get to bring into the house that can support that process? And so, of course, water is spiritual, And water is of the body, right? What are we, 75, 80, 62, whatever percent water. And, you know, and when we have anger that we're not facing, it's submerged, right, just like in the water.
Right.
So I started with the pool and then thought to myself, okay, great, what's anger, right? Anger, heavy, bricks, right? We all think of bricks. We all think of breaking. We all think of, you know, throwing bricks in a window. We've all seen that imagery, you know, of anger protester, angry protesters, you know, taking bricks. So it kind of came together that way. And you know, I never know what's going to happen while I'm doing the exercise because I never have all the parts worked out because I follow you, you know. I follow you. So, you know, yes, I had the smudge hammer, so, I had all the components. But, you know, you and I, the coaching that makes it all make sense is kind of like the glue, right? It's all the glue that kind of makes it all work together, which is, you know, what takes me to my next exercise with you that we did together, which was the rocks.
Yeah. Yeah, that one I actually don't like to watch. It's so interesting. Yeah, I still have a lot of the rocks, though, like in my home.
Yeah.
But definitely.
Well,
and I have the outcome of that exercise on my altar. So, yeah, it was definitely powerful.
Yeah, the rocks exercise and the brick exercise are two of my favorite exercises that I did in the Starting Over house. And the rock one was I came up with it because I wanted you to experience the amount of burden that you felt because your mother passed away on 9/11. And, of course, I couldn't physically, right, put you in a place with all this burden. But if I could create a metaphor for you to kind of see it visually so that you could kind of get it in your heart and so that you could go, holy crap. You know, I mean, what was it like? So for people who, again, haven't seen it, you can go to facebook.com/WanderBritton. And this one was I had different barrels of rocks and different sizes of rocks. And go ahead. Do you remember?
Yeah, no, I definitely do. So to preface it, like I had made sure, even though I worked in downtown Manhattan, like I worked on the exchange place, right by Stock Exchange, I had managed to never revisit the World Trade Center. Like, I had avoided it. I had avoided all ceremonies, like everything. And so that day, I knew my second step was facing and overcoming 9/11, but I didn't know what that meant. My overarching goal was, like, healing from a public loss. And I came down that day, and those buckets of rocks were, most of them were in a pile already, so it was just rubble. It was just rubble. And, and I think internally it was most uncomfortable I probably felt for a while. Everything in me was just like, turn around and run. Like, this is not safe. Like, you are not going here. Turn around and run. But I had also made a commitment to myself that, like, hey, I'm going all in on this, like, I am fully, fully surrendering to this process. So I also knew I couldn't run. Yeah.
And so what I did is, you know, we threw out a whole bunch of, you know, little rocks for all the people that were impacted by 9/11. You know, so tens of thousands of people were impacted or, you know, hundreds of thousands and quote unquote, we can even say millions, but just tons of little tiny rocks to represent all of the people touched by 9/11. And then we did a little bit larger rocks for all the families that were impacted by 9/11. And then we did the third size, which were the people who died in 9/11.
And then I added, like, a whole nother level because I was carrying so much. I also was carrying, like, all the people who went to war. I remember there was a point where you, like, dumped even more. So before all that happened, you asked me to pick out of the, like, baseline rubble a rock that represented my mother and a rock that represented myself. And this isn't shown in the video as much. And it was such this powerful, like, piece of the exercise, too, because I was sitting in the rubble and you were, like, asking me, like, who I was carrying grief for. Like, who was I, like, all that, what you spoke about, the burden, and you were dumping rocks on me. And all of a sudden I looked down and I still had my mom, like, super tight, the fist that was holding my mom. But the fist that was holding the rock that represented me, I'd lost. like without even like being aware of it, I had let the rock go.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, which was frightening.
And then you found it.
Yeah, you asked him. You asked if I need help. And I was like, yes. And you got in the rebel with me and helped me find it.
And
yeah.
What was so beautiful is those rocks ended up being heart-shaped rocks.
Yeah, I still have them.
And which was, you know, I didn't go to the rock store and go, hey, by the way, could you make sure you put some rock, you know, heart-shaped rocks in there? So, you know, these are the things of kismet, right? These are the things of, you know, God, you can't plan these things, right? I couldn't be like, hey, when I dump the rocks, make sure the heart rock, I mean, one, I didn't even know there was a heart rock in there, too. There's no way I could have planted a heart rock, right? So I love the fact that you know, I think this is just how, when you're willing, you know, when you're willing to heal, when you're willing to say yes, and you showed your willingness by, not running away to, you know, I took a chair and put it right in the middle of the rocks, and I said, get in it. And you were like, what? I mean, you did not want to get into that chair. And I said, and I was pretty, you know, tough. I said, well, this is all the people you're carrying, so let's just, you know, let's just own it. And I had to get in that chair. And, you know, your willingness created the, you know, the healing moment and the opportunity for those rocks to show up, those heart rocks representing you and your mom.
Yeah, no, it was the whole trip. Yeah, that was wonderful. And then it ended with I was given like this little treasure box to paint and decorate for myself.
Yeah.
Because this whole idea that I could keep my grief like personal, or I can make it public, and then I was given the opportunity to turn that whole rubble into a memorial later on. I think I still had another few exercises. I think I had exercises with Dr. Stan there, though, too, because it took me a while to get through that. But I was able to also, like, take some ownership there, being like, hey, you know, none of the memorials were defined, felt reflective of, like, me and my desires and family. I was able to do one with all of you guys.
So
And
so how did the, if you could, I know this is a tough question, but, you know, how would you describe the impact of starting over on your life?
Did you achieve your goal?
Did you achieve your goal?
Well, yes. Oh, definitely. My final goal had been, like, to become the center of my own life, which I think took me, like, a while because I didn't even know what that looked like or what that meant. But luckily, I feel like, all the foundational stuff that starting over gave me, including, like, relationships, I'm a completely different person. I say that and it sounds so like, oh, I'm a completely different person.
Yeah.
But the way in which I like react to things, like I really changed my nervous system and my like way to process things. And I developed, you know, this deep, intimate like relationship with myself and this ability to like navigate the world in a way. Like I carry a lot of trauma, right? Like, and I work in a field right now with a lot of trauma. But yet, thanks to starting over and that process and the community and all the tools and the Fearless Living Institute, I'm able to navigate this world in a really, like, joyous, wonderful way, even during these times. And I'm so grateful because, you know, there's so much around us that could easily make that hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that, like, no, I can, you know, I can have – I know that in my body lived the experience of, like, not wanting to be on this planet because of what I've witnessed and, like, who I've lost. I also know in my body lives this ability to live on this planet in a way that's, like, connected, you know, to the divine and to nature and to, like, such deep, like, love and joy for people. So it's kind of special because I didn't have that before.
But you have it now. You have it now.
Right.
And so when I'm trying to look here. So when Dana asks, are you still angry if you found your way to forgiveness? The answer is?
That question's so hard for me because I'm not really clear what specifically in terms of my anger was like being spoken about.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm always, I think, going to be angry with the way people use like tragedy and politicize it and like all of that. I think what's different is my relationship to anger. Like, you know, I get angry, like, but I'm not attached to it. Like I'm able to right. move it and release it. And forgiveness is always, I guess my forgiveness may be more authentic now because mm-hmm. it's no longer, like before it was automatic. Like I was mm-hmm. raised to not hold grudges. So like I would just go through those motions. Well, now I think my relationship's forgiveness is, I really do that internal work in the mm-hmm. process as well.
And I think what you're bringing up is so important because I think that most people think that forgiveness means I can never be angry again or I can never be hurt again or yeah. I have to be best friends with the people who hurt me or I should, you know, invite them to dinner. And what you're saying and what, of course, I believe as well is, you know, forgiveness is a process, but it doesn't take away our rights. Just because you forgive something doesn't take away your right to be angry or to be
yeah.
like, and I love how you say, you know, you still get angry about how people use tragedy for their political gain or to, you know, to manipulate others or, you know, and we should all be angry about that, right? We should all be angry about that. But we all don't see it the way you see it because you lived it and you experienced it. You have an ability that many people don't have because they don't have a personal experience and they've never taken the time to really pay attention to that level of, you know, that experience. So I love what you're saying is, and just to clarify for everyone, forgiveness is an ongoing job. So, you know, Jessica didn't forgive her mother once or forgive the terrorist once or forgive herself once or forgive her family once or forgive her father once. I mean, it's an ongoing process and it's called life.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I really believe
And life. Really, like, for me, I think where it shows up more is, like, the person that cuts me off in line or, like, sure. is rude to me. Like, those
yeah.
are more of the playgrounds where I feel like I have to, like, really practice and keep myself, you know, accountable.
Yeah.
yeah.
Are you open to answering some questions?
Yeah, definitely.
So Michelle writes, what is the most important thing you would tell somebody who is losing their mother? I'm sorry you lost your mother in such a tragic way. I'm losing mine to ALS. Hugs to you.
Oh, my heart goes out to her, first of all. Mm-hmm. I would say one of my favorite, like, exercises that nobody saw because it never made the final cut was one day Rhonda just showed up at the front door and took me to a room and said, sorry. That it absolutely sucks not having a mom.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it does, and just giving yourself permission to know that it does is huge.
Yeah.
And then I think, so that was that, like it sucks not having a mom. And I have some of my closest friends are women and men that have lost their moms because I think we
yeah.
have, you know, an understanding of how we kind of navigate, you know, this world without your mom, especially if you've been blessed with, like I was blessed with a really incredible loving mom. And that was another thing that I really was part of my healing process was, you know, being in that gratitude of like some people sadly don't even get to experience that. And I had
yeah.
the most loving, incredible mother and being able to see how that and appreciate how that still shows up and lives through me. I definitely think, you know, building a network of other people who've lost their mom is really helpful. And I tell anybody, I do a lot of grief work with people and I always say there's no rules the first year. Like,
mm-hmm.
you just take care of yourself.
Okay.
Like, don't attach any judgment to what you're doing. If you need to, like, cancel plans and watch TV or if you need to, like, be around people, like, don't try to think that it should look a certain way. And that's been, like, that was so freeing for me because initially I was so terrified that I was going to break down and nobody would know how to handle me and I'd, like, be committed that I spent way too much energy, like, making my grief look pretty, like, that I had it under control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like we talked about earlier, it's not linear. It's just, like, nothing's linear.
Mm-hmm. Nothing's linear. Nothing's linear. It's all circular.
Yeah.
It's all
yeah.
messy and it's all beautiful.
Yeah.
Karen asks, what was she like, which you just shared a little bit, and then she says, what are some of your best memories of your mom?
I think my mom was just so much fun and so lovely. She always, like, she really modeled kindness and, like, heart. And I don't think I realized that so much until, like, later on. But the things that I hear back, especially from, like, friends from junior high or high school, are so touching because they talk about, like, how, like, she would never let us gossip or how she would always make sure that, like, every single student, classmate was invited to parties and, you know, always really keeping, like, love at the forefront. I mean, we were very family-oriented. I preferred being home than going out usually, so my favorite times were usually just, like, sitting on the couch, holding hands and talking. She loved good music. She was fun, you know. She liked to cook. She liked to entertain us, and her whole world revolved around us, and all of us revolved around her. So yeah.
Well, Kelly and Jen asks basically a similar question. How do you keep her spirit alive inside of yours, and how do you celebrate her life now?
Yeah, I mean, she's alive in my life every single day. I mean, I have an altar, first of all. And when I say altar, I just mean a place where I go to, like, in the morning kind of gather and, like, take deep breaths and, you know, say some prayers. And I have my little starting over box with a rock exercise on it and a picture of her. So I always have this intentional, like, dialogue, I think, in the morning. But also, you know, my mom was very intentional with, like, the path she put me on in terms of this idea of, like, you're here to be of service. And I think that the career that I've built and the work that I do is really honoring that. Like, I have St. Francis's part of his prayer tattooed on my feet. Like, I really, like, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace, like, where there's darkness, let me so light, and that's how I live, like, intentionally almost every single day. And this year I was extremely blessed with, through a lot of prayer of just being like, please use me. Like, that was really my prayer for a while, like, how can I be used on this planet right now during this time? I got this incredible new job opportunity to lead a women's center on a college campus, and I see, you know, suddenly I get to, like, you know. So she lives on with, like, just what I'm trying to, who I'm trying to be and, like, what type of impact I'm having on the world. And now I get to, you know, support countless young and older women and kind of supporting them and achieving their dreams and being their safe space. And she was, she was a safe space for so many.
Sandy asks,
all of that.
Sandy asks, my mom passed away on January 28, 1986. I can never forget that day because it was the day the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded. How do you handle being constantly reminded of the day your mom passed because it's a historical date?
Yeah. Well, I have a good relationship with anger and frustration now because it's still not like I still, I think, like, I had a shift at one point too where I, like, and it was really thanks to starting over because I think I cried, like, nobody had seen me cry in my professional or friendship life during, like, the 4 years after losing my mom, and then I think I cried every single minute on starting over. But I really learned to, like, protect the fact that I'm sensitive, and so it's my responsibility to put a lot of protection in place because of that. And I also know, like, from my studies of trauma and, like, the own healing I've done, that, you know, your body remembers. I think this is one of the first exercises Rhonda and I did together about, like, how it's a barometer for what's happening, which I had never realized. Like, I would physically start to feel sick, you know, mid-July. And, like, my PTSD would show up in even ways I didn't even realize. Like, I'd become a little bit more paranoid, or, you know, I'd not be as trusting of things, or I'd be having trouble sleeping and never connecting and said, like, oh, this is because we're getting closer to the anniversary and it's not as safe right now to be exposing. So I definitely take lots of extra precautions in self-care and, like, protecting myself. And then I'm really intentional about not making any commitments on 9/11. Because it's my, like, that way, however I wake up feeling, like, I kind of just roll with it. I tried to, like, was it 2 years ago, I decided to try something new and went to a public ceremony with my family in California, and it was horrible. And like, I was like, nope, never again. Like, I am giving myself, you know, 1,000% permission to do what I need to do to take care of myself. So that's how I handle. It feels like a little bit of a, like, preparing for war, and my siblings and I will talk, like, by the nighttime, you feel this sense of relief, which I'm sure people can relate to who deal with anniversaries. Yeah, and then on Mother's Day for a while, I found a best, like, I have a really good friend that lost her mother, so she and I would go and do little, like, ceremonial things together just to kind of celebrate our moms together. So those things are nice, too, but yeah.
Yeah, Krista does ask, how do you spend 9/11 now? And what I'm hearing is that you allow yourself to have that day and do whatever moves you, and you're awake to if you start feeling things in, I think what you said is so important, when what you and I talked about is your body's a barometer, and, you know, you start feeling in July, and you'd be like, it's July, for God's sake, it's not September 11th, but, you know, your body just anticipates. I mean, for, I would say, 20 plus years of my life, my parents died June 15th, and starting Mother's Day, from Mother's Day till the end of June, just forget about it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I was completely...
And birthdays, and I mean, it's just like there's so many.
exactly, because, yeah, it's your mom's birthday.
Yeah,
and then,
you have your own
grief
calendar. It, like, runs on its own holiday schedule.
Yeah, but I think that's really important that you're saying that, because a grief calendar... I think that we try to pretend that, oh, they died so long ago. It's 40 years, 20 years, 12 years, you know, 16 years, you know, right? We try to pretend like, well, I shouldn't be feeling this anymore. It's been 16 years. What's the, come on. And to really just allow yourself to go, well, I might have this grief calendar forever. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Mother's Day may be like this odd event for me every Mother's Day. And 9/11 may always bring me some sadness, and I might always, you know, feel it at Christmas because she's not here. Like allowing
and
yourself.
One,
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I would say, and 1 year it might absolutely suck, and the next year it might be like, wow, there's a lot of love today. Like, it just, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I think, though, that's one of the unique gifts. Like, there's so much I don't appreciate about the publicness of it, but, I feel like grief can be so isolating, and especially anniversaries, because for most of the world, people don't know, like, there's an automatic association, like, oh, this is the day my friend's parent passed. But, you know, in my situation, I get so much love and, like, so much support on the anniversary. And I really try to focus on that, of just being like, wow, like, there's something really incredible about being that supported and loved. And I recognize that, you know, and that was one of the most interesting things when leaving the house, because I left and it started airing like that week. I was one of the only people out when it was like airing. And the amount of people that would stop me in public places to share their grief. Because I think it is, it could feel so incredibly isolated. And if you've been told, like, oh, you should be over it, or have any of those voices, like, oh, my goodness, like, that's even more, like, yeah. There's a great book, too, Motherless Daughters. That book, she has one where it's just letters written by women from different, like, periods of time since losing their mom, so like 1 to 3 months, 6 to 12, and that book brought me a lot of comfort, because there's always that little voice of like, am I too sad, am I too overwhelmed, like, you know, is this too much? And then you talk to other people who are willing to talk about their grief, and you're like, oh no, this is grief.
And there's another book called Father Loss, for those that have lost their father. It's a beautiful book. I remember when I was in my third DUI and in, you know, in DUI school, you know, I went to a year of, because it was my third DUI, not only did I spend time in jail, but I also spent a year in a DUI program. And part of it was working with a therapist every other week, privately and then in groups, the other ones. Of course, in the groups, I was like, I hate everyone, you know. And I remember the therapist giving me this book called Father Loss. And I'm like literally looking at her like, what's the big deal? Like, like you, I didn't have any permission. It's like, no, this is not why I'm screwed up. This is not why I'm drinking. This is not why, you know, I'm, you know, cutting out, you know, sleeping around, you know, having nightmares every night. No, 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 because I didn't want it to be that, because if it was that, then I was screwed. It felt like I was screwed, right?
Yeah.
Like how can you get through something that's so horrific, right? So I remember when she handed me the book Father Loss and just started reading it, just like you with Motherless Daughters. And of course, I know that book as well. You know, those books, just hearing about other people's experience and also just knowing that you have permission, that father loss, mother loss, that is, it's real and it's a lifetime. And even if your mother is not, like my mother died, like I said, when I was 14. So, you know, there's a way to work on forgiveness and healing, even though they're not here, right? Like, so let's say you had a horrible relationship with your mother or father. Doesn't mean that you can't heal it even after they're gone. I know that kind of sounds weird in a way, but it's actually very, very possible. I know that's what I did. I mean, my father and I talk all the time now. So Aurora asks, what was some of the most helpful or the best thing someone said to you after your mom's death? Do you have any, besides maybe me coming to the Starting Over House and saying, it sucks,
I know. I was like, oh, helpful? I don't know if I got, okay, there has to be something.
Well, they say sometimes it's hard to know what to say to someone. I think they're looking for guidance when somebody's in grief.
Again, I think I don't know. I don't know if it was, mine was that different because of this, but again, that element of like everybody being so terrified and like hurt because the whole, like because of this was a national terrorist act, I think I was getting a lot of that, too, in people's responses to me. So I, like, acknowledge that. I always, like, I mean, you've heard me say it already. Like, I always say how my, like, heart goes out to you. Like, is there anything I can do to support you? Or if there's anything I can do, or how do you feel about me bringing over, like, dropping off a meal? You don't have to interact with me. So I don't know. I didn't, like, it's so sad, but I can't think of one thing that was said to me initially that felt in any way comforting. But partly is I don't know if anybody could have comforted me right then. Now. Like, my walls were so, you know, up. I do know I felt a sense of comfort when my high school friend, whose mother had been murdered when she was, like, 12 or around that age, when she reached out, I remember for the first time feeling like I could breathe a little. Mm-hmm. And relax, because I had somebody on the other line who, you know, who got it. I put it in quotes with my hands right now. So I do remember that. But and I still, like, I still don't know what the right, like, right thing is to say, or if I say the right things. Mm-hmm. But I do know when I have somebody that, like, loses a parent now, I just let them know I'm always here, like, any day or hour.
And I'll just add to that I think one of the things that you hit on is, you know, bringing over food. I know it seems like bringing over food, it's like, you know, during that time of tragedy and during that time of grief, you know, getting a meal so you don't have to think about your own self and eating is so healing. But also want to add something else, you know, in the first weeks after somebody's passing, usually there is a lot of, like, people bringing meals over or calling and checking in. But the worst part of a passing, somebody losing somebody you love, is 3 months later, 6 months later, 9 months later, a year later, because nobody's calling and nobody's bringing meals over. And you're just starting to maybe loosen up and start grieving. Because in the first, you know, month to 3 months or 6 months, or, I mean, for me it took 20 years, you may not be in a place to even allow yourself to grieve in beyond just a, you know, maybe a cry, but then you kind of suck it up like Jessica did, like I did for 20 years. And so it's more, not that you don't want to do something, you know, definitely send flowers, definitely bring a meal, do all those things. But I think even more important is 3 months later, stop over, bring a meal, write a card. 6 months later, stop and drop by a meal. Send a card, you know, really personal card, you know, stop by, bring a meal, 9 months, a year. Those are going to be the times when they're not surrounded and they're feeling the loneliness of the loss. that your meal, your card, your stopping by, just a hug, may be the moment that really allows them to break down and feel the loss. And I know that might be scary to be the instrument of that, but that's what they need. You know, and they need to feel that loved, and they can only feel that loss if they feel that loved. So I think for me, that's what I attempted to do in the Starting Over House is just, you know, love Jessica, love you so much that you felt safe enough to just fall in, you know, fall into my arms and just allow yourself to feel.
Yeah, which was huge. I mean, it probably looked like, oh, yeah, she jumped right in and started breaking down. But I even remember, like, one of my most powerful exercises and most uncomfortable. There was a lot of uncomfortable ones.
That's my middle name.
You sent me to a plaza. It was after I had done, like, the bricks and the rocks, and I had to collect hugs from strangers. And I remember being like, oh, my gosh, she is not making me do this. I don't want to be – like, I didn't even like to be touched. Like, there was a part of me that no longer knew how to really, like you said, receive love and affection and tenderness. And I found the other day when we talked about, like, chatting today, I found – my scorecard. I think I had 68 hugs after that exercise. I just remember how it became like, once I was able to actually like receive from these people, because initially I was like approached it like I have to do this. But then when I actually started explaining why and people were like coming out of stores to give me hugs, like total strangers, you know, from like 3-year-olds to, you know, our elders, it was so incredible and intoxicating and, like, filling me with joy. And, you have to be able to receive love in order to grieve.
That's right.
It's true.
Yeah. Michelle writes, bless you, Jessica, for sharing your story and your love for your mother. And Kathy writes, my thoughts are with her every anniversary which passes. I want to send her lots of love. And Carol writes, me too. Megan writes, I always think of Jessica when 9/11 comes around. I hope she's doing well. And so many other people are giving their love. And I think we've answered a lot of the questions. Maybe haven't said the person's name, but basically, generally, I think got most of the questions answered. So if you could leave everybody with one thought or one word or one sentence or one hope, you know, anyone listening right now that maybe is going through a loss, a grief, has post-trauma, you know, really, you know, kind of closing in on themselves or maybe shut down a little bit, what's something you'd want them to know?
One, I always tell, like, folks close to me, it takes a team. Like, it took a team, and it takes a team to, like, kind of keep me living this way. Like, in no place have I been like, oh, I figured this out, and now I'm happy, and I've arrived, you know? So I think having, like, building that support network, like, for all different aspects. Like, I have the friends that I can, like, call when I'm feeling, like pain, but I also have the massage therapist that, like, helps keep me in my body. And so I really think recognizing, like, there's such strength and, like, the real warrior way, you know, is one that's rooted in self-care and nurturing and asking for support and that it's time that for us to, like, really step into that. I think another piece of advice, like, this whole idea of extreme self-care, I think, like, that's really important, like, all of that, but also compassion. Like, I have a tremendous amount of, like, forgiveness and compassion for myself that I'm really comfortable in. And it took a long time to get to that place, but it's such, like, a gift to myself and in my own growth and challenges of just, like, being willing to not take myself too seriously and to kind of, like, embrace that. And then I think those are my main ones, I'm trying to think. But, yeah, those are really, really big. And I also, and I think everybody, if they end up on a spiritual path, whether they do what that looks like is all up to them. Like, that's up to you. But for me, that was, I wouldn't, like, if I hadn't cultivated some type of, like, relationship and faith within me and to the universe and around, and, like, mine looks a little different than other people's, like that would make things harder. But I do have this like very core belief that I'm here to like do light work and love work, and like that's the responsibility I've chosen. If I kind of stay on that path of being of service and plugging into those, then I am taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
I would have never thought if like, oh, right when you graduate college, you're gonna witness a plane hitting a building, and you know, 10 minutes later, find out your mom was involved in it, and then you're gonna see, you know, just what I visually saw and experienced, and what, like, I would have never thought that I would be able to not only survive that, but transform it into this like really incredible life, like both internally and externally right now. And so I think being able to plug into that too, of things are so terribly scary and tough right now for a lot of people. And it's okay to feel that like despair, but to keep that faith that, you know, as dark as it's getting, like the light is so huge and it's going to come through, and like it's
mm-hmm.
there and
yeah.
it's brewing and it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Jessica. Thank you so much for talking to me today and connecting, and, you know, people ask about you all the time, and I'm so grateful that you're able to, you know, honor their desire to find out how you are, their yearning to connect with you, as well as to share your journey. I mean, I think it's so inspiring, and hopefully what people take away from this, if you're listening to this right now, is something that Jessica said, which is, you know, it takes a team and you need support. So it's time to take action for yourself, whatever that looks like, you know, whether that's reaching out to a friend, whether that's, you know, finally taking a course, whether it's getting a coach, you know, whatever that looks like. But, you know, what I know to be true for myself and, you know, is that, you know, you alone in your room won't solve it and won't heal it. You know, we need each other. And I want to thank you, Jessica, for making my life better, and, you know, working with you also healed me in a whole new place. So I just want to thank you for that. It's just been such a joy to know you.
Yeah, and thank you, Rhonda. I mean, I honestly, like, you saved, like, you helped me save my own life, to put it in those terms. But if it wasn't for, like, doing the work that you did in your own healing and the curriculum that you have, like, blessed us all with, because I still think it's one of the most, I've been to graduate school now for counseling, and I'm like, nope, fly, like, the curriculum we use at the Coaching Institute is phenomenal. And if you hadn't kind of made this your path, you know, I wouldn't have been able to make this mine. And thank you for paying it forward.
Thank you, Jessica.
I know you not only helped me heal and all the sisters on starting over, but we've all, you know, it's been that ripple effect. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And it has been my supreme pleasure. And if you want to, is there a way for people to, are you on Facebook? I don't even know if you're on Facebook, are you?
I am on Facebook.
We're friends, aren't we?
And, yeah, we're friends, yeah.
And do you want?
My job, I'm paid by the state now, so I don't post a lot, but
mm-hmm.
you'll see lots of pictures of me and my dogs. And some glimpses of New Mexico. So yeah, if you want to get to know my dogs, definitely you can connect with me on Facebook.
Great. And again, if you want to see the videos of the exercises that Jessica and I talked about, you can go to facebook.com/ Rhonda Britton, RhondaBritten. And it's Jessica Holland, HOLLAND. And you'll recognize her beautiful face. And of course, you can always find her in my friend list too. And I'll make sure that she's tagged in this interview so that you can find her quickly. But again, Jessica, thank you so much. And I'm knowing that your heart is healing the world in the ways that only you can. Thank you very much. It's such a blessing to talk to you. Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you.